Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of June. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Ellen Gray.
Good morning.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. Now, we start with what's on. On Tuesday the 19th of June, there's a lunchtime concert at the Cathedral from 1 to 2pm. Emily Capulet will be playing the piano. The concert is free and there's a retiring collection. On Wednesday the 20th, Eleanor Harrison performs in a concert entitled Baroque Violin at the Guildhall, Winchester, from 8 to 9pm. Tickets cost £12.50, available at the door. The Nuffield Theatre has an Akebourne play, It Could Be Any One of Us, from the 19th to the 23rd of June. And the box office number is 02380-671-771. I'll repeat that, 02380-671-771. The following week, at the Winchester Theatre Royal, from Thursday the 28th to Saturday the 30th of June, Blue Apple Theatre, who help people with learning disabilities to perform, are staging Hamlet in what should be a very interesting production. And the box office for the Theatre Royal is, telephone is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Lighting Up Time ends today, Friday the 15th of June, at 4:51 a.m. and begins at 9:22 p.m. On Wednesday the 20th of June, it still ends at 4:51 a.m. It's sort of like the tide coming in and going out, isn't it? And begins at 9:25 p.m. And now we come to the main headlines of the Hampshire News. And they are: Storm brews over plans for huge wind farm, Winchester's race for life, and new sports centre could be jewel in Winchester's crown. So we'll go over to Ellen for the story behind the first headline, please.
Storm brews over plans for huge wind farm. 17-turbine scheme is the biggest in the county. By Joseph Curtis. A huge planning battle is looming over a £50 million plan to build the biggest wind farm in Hampshire, north of Winchester. EDF Energy Renewables wants to erect up to 17 turbines near Bullington Cross and has submitted a preliminary report to the City Council. The site is northeast of the junction of the A34 and the A303, comprising open arable farmland and woods. The turbines are 125 metres, that's about 400 feet tall, and could produce 34 megawatts of clean energy, allegedly enough to power 15,800 homes annually. It would be among the tallest structures in Hampshire. The Spinnaker in Portsmouth is 170 metres, 560 feet, and Hannington TV transmitter mast in North Hampshire is 134 metres high. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, who represents Wanston and Mitchell-Dever, described the plan as shocking and said the turbines were inefficient sources of energy compared to offshore turbines and wave technology. He said land-based wind farms are ridiculously inefficient, and having them on a not particularly high feature is even less efficient. The whole concept of land-based turbines is perverse, and putting them in the countryside, where they will take away the natural beauty of the area, is obscene. Fellow ward member Councillor Malcolm Wright said there was no justification for the turbines. He said it's the most unsuitable place, as with most land wind farms. The visual impact plus the environmental impact on the local wildlife is not acceptable. These turbines generate a low-frequency noise which upsets humans and animals, and wherever they have been installed, the local environment has been affected. Visually speaking, most people I have spoken to are against them, because they are huge great things. Councillor Wright added the area was becoming overdeveloped with the nearby recycling plant at Bullington Cross. A proposal for an energy-from-waste power station at Mitchell Dever Station, and now the wind farm plan. Councillor Wright added, I really do wonder what's going on here because it's becoming a dumping ground and this development is not required. Wanston Parish Councillor Lucy Dowson, responsible for planning, said the council had some concerns. She said, our really big concern is health-wise. It's a huge voltage of power that's possibly going to be coming across this area, and insufficient research has been done on the impact on local people. The increased amount of traffic around the A303 and A34 junction will be a problem too, and we already have difficulty there. Tessa Robertson, Vice Chairman of conservation group The Diva Society, added the government should come up with a firm policy on wind plans. EDF spokesman Joe Barron said the company was looking forward to discussing the plans with residents soon. She said, we will shortly be announcing details of public exhibitions where residents can view our plans in more detail. The views and opinions we receive during consultation are important as they will help to finalise our proposals. EDF will lease the land at Upper Norton Farm but would not reveal the owner or how large the plot was. The site falls in Winchester, Basingstoke and Test Valley Council areas. A full planning application is due to be submitted later this year, and EDF hopes to begin construction in September 2014. Hampshire has very few wind farms. Curtin Farm near Sparsholt installed three small ones, 18 metres high, last year, and a proposal for two 126.5-metre turbines in the South Downs National Park near East Meon was scrapped in 2009.
This is an account of the Winchester Race for Life last week, and it's headed, Joining In Helps People Like Jane, and the Jane referred to is Jane Pardy, whose smiling photograph is the main feature of the article, with her pink top and pink sort of cowboy hat. There are lots of other pictures of youngsters very energetically, look as if they're finishing the 5-kilometre race, as they're absolutely leaping all feet off the ground, and others who are obviously cheering the fact that they've actually completed the course. So back to Jane Pardy. She's living proof that the efforts of the 1,600 women and girls who took part in Winchester's Race for Life could not be more vital. Addressing the crowd before the start of the annual 5-kilometre event, mum of two Jane Pardy gave an emotional speech about her personal cancer battle. She received great applause after confirming exactly how important the funds the runners were raising for Cancer Research UK are. In 2003, she said, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and in 2009, I was diagnosed with secondary bone cancer. She's 43, she is, from North Bansley. But thanks to the work Cancer Research UK do, you can see I'm still here, very much alive and happily living with cancer. The medications they research have helped to keep me healthy. Thank you to everyone for coming here today. Running, jogging or walking their way around the course, participants are well and truly in the pink, sporting a colourful array of tutus, wigs, cowboy hats and leg warmers. held in Winchester for the last 10 years, Sunday's drizzly conditions failed to dampen the electric atmosphere. Emotions ran high as many of those taking part in the event at the Garrison Ground in Bar End Road have been directly affected by the devastating disease themselves, or were close to someone who has been. Every hour, 5 people in the South are diagnosed with cancer, and it makes it so important that you are here today doing something wonderful. Cancer Research UK event organiser Rachel White told the crowd, "Cancer never sleeps, so we really need to keep your support and continue raising vital funds." After the warm-ups and a minute's silence, Cancer Research UK's chief clinician and the director of the charity's Southampton Centre, Professor Peter Johnson, sounded the starting klaxon. First across the line by a clear stretch was 12-year-old Lizzie Payne from Horton Heath, who also won the event last year. Completing the course in 21 minutes and 4 seconds, the Wyvern Community School pupil said, "It's great to win again. I feel really proud." Organisers hope to raise around £145,000 for Cancer Research UK from the Winchester event. And there's a little note at the bottom that says entries are still open for Southampton's Race for Life on Sunday, July the 8th. Both a 5-kilometre and a 10-kilometre event will be held on the Common. To sign up, visit raceforlife.org or telephone 0871 641 1111.
A new sports centre would be a jewel in Winchester's crown, says the university chief. Winchester City councillors have backed a vision for Winchester until 2020, which includes the controversial development of Barton Farm. The Town Forum supported the report at a meeting last Thursday before sending it on to Cabinet for approval. But councillors agreed to amend the wording of the report after it was criticised by Gavin Blackman, chairman of the Save Barton Farm Group, for presuming 2,000 homes would be built on Barton Farm. Several other public bodies spoke at the meeting to encourage councillors to adopt their suggestions. Tommy Geddes, Deputy Vice-Chancellor at the University of Winchester, said the council should back plans to build a new sports and leisure centre in Bar End, rather than spend money improving River Park Leisure Centre. He said a new sports centre could offer better quality of provision and economic and environmental sustainability well beyond what could be achieved at River Park. "I think Bar End Sports Complex would be a huge jewel in Winchester's crown. It's an opportunity that comes along just once in a lifetime."
That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with death notices. And they are today: Denton, Ivan Denton. Harper, Virginia Harper, in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. Harwood, Alison Harwood, peacefully. Leyland, Arthur Leyland, in hospital, aged 80. Robjohns, Gertrude Robjohns, aged 86. Terry, Joan Terry, peacefully in hospital, aged 90. And finally, Thompson, Edith Thompson, after a short illness, aged 90. And now we go over to Bobby for Christian comment.
And this week it is offered by Mary Gray, who entitles it 100 Days of Peace. "So it's all over then. pageantry on the river, the flypast, solemn church thanksgiving services, concerts, streets parties in the rain, and now back to work and more rain. But Jubilee need not be over. Scripture tells us that Jubilee for the Israelites historically meant cancelling debts, freeing slaves, and letting the land lie fallow every 50 years. Another idea was inaugurated on Friday, Saturday, June 8th, 9th at St Martin in the Fields Church in London with an all-night peace vigil. With the Olympics coming up soon, the London Diocese of Westminster, Brentwood and Southwark teamed up to launch a brilliant initiative called 100 Days of Peace. The aim, originating from the Catholic Justice and Peace Commission of Westminster, is to promote 100 days of peacemaking in schools, parishes and communities for 50 days either side of the Games. This is accompanied by an equally important UN resolution signed by all 193 member states calling for a cessation of conflict during the period of the Games. It calls on all nations to fulfil the commitments of the UN resolution and enable peaceful Games to be enjoyed around the world. It builds on the concept of a sacred truce before, during, and after the Games, which enabled competitors to reach Olympia without being attacked as they passed through the small, warring city-states of the Greek peninsula. Peace, an original ideal of the Greek Olympics, was also part of the Games revived in 1896 by Pierre de Coubertin. It is symbolised by the dove of peace, with the traditional Olympic flame in the background. June the 8th marked 50 days before the Games begin, and October the 28th, the 50th day after. Other events are being organised by the Jimmy Meitzen Foundation, the John Paul II Sports Foundation, and by London citizens who marked the start of the 100 Days of Peace by highlighting their city safe havens achievements around London, all being filmed from a helicopter. The prayer vigil began with hourly prayers from different Christian traditions, as well as Sikhs and Buddhists, and moving speeches from many non-governmental organisations, Pax Christi, CAFOD, World Vision and Tear Fund, who linked their work to end poverty, hunger and violence with the urgency of peacemaking. It culminated in songs of praise and a service at 11 a.m. on Saturday, June the 9th, attended by many church leaders. This was London. Surely, here in Winchester, the former capital, and in Hampshire, we can play our part in such a peacemaking initiative, continuing the sense of Jubilee and spirit of hope.
We continue with letters to the editor, and we'll go over to Ellen for the first letter, please.
Mike Manley writes about the bulldog spirit. Sir, the celebrations over recent weeks have been absolutely fantastic, with everybody really enjoying themselves during these rather austere times. It makes one very proud to be British. We are so lucky to be born in this wonderful country, despite all its ups and downs, and to see the old bulldog spirit still there. It's enough to bring tears to one's eyes. If this spirit can now persist over the entire country, We will soon get through these awful times we find ourselves in. Mike Manley, Byton Lane, Gundleton.
Netball gets a raw diggle in Winchester, writes Kim Skeen, who is head of netball at Peter Simmons College and Perrin School and coach for the Winchester Netball Club. As a local netball coach, working with schools, colleges and clubs, I think it is time Winchester stepped up to its commitment to this hugely popular participation sport with funding for a new site. Thousands of girls, teenagers and women play netball weekly, and one of the biggest difficulties is finding a suitable site for training. Most courts are booked up long term, making it very difficult for clubs to expand their membership. England Netball is committed to getting women of all ages back into the sport, but the lack of a state-of-the-art development in Winchester is holding it back. With obesity on the rise, surely we should be encouraging anything that provides fitness, enjoyment, teamwork and competitiveness. That's from Kim Skeen, who's head of netball at the college and at school.
A wonderful service, writes Peter Bolger. Sir, after much deliberation, we decided in Crawley Village to celebrate the Diamond Jubilee with a traditional street party located outside our village hall. This meant closing off Peach Hill Lane, the main road through the village. We applied to Winchester City Council, with much trepidation, for a road closure. The application procedures and advice from the Traffic and Transport Department was so helpful and straightforward. Road closure signs were delivered, all without charge. An absolutely wonderful service. Peter Bolger, who is trustee of Crawley Village Hall.
Fuel for thought, Mike Matthews writes about. Sir, what a pity your headline story on fuel poverty in the Chronicle on June the 7th did not mention the Surviving Winter Appeal 2011-12, promoted by Saga and the Community Foundation Network. A total of £2.5 million was raised in new funds expressly to support those in fuel poverty. The money was donated by those prepared to sacrifice their personal winter fuel payments to help others in greater need. It would be pleasing to think such individual reallocations of a benefit given to all over 60s would turn into a trend which challenges the right to universal benefits without the need for means testing. Mike Matthews, Brockenhurst.
This letter is from Gavin Blackman, who's chairman of the Save Barton Farm Group. Sir, people may be forgiven for thinking the proposed development at Barton Farm is a done deal, given recent pronouncements. This is capped by the Town Forum's latest Vision for Winchester document. The members of the forum are the 18 city ward councillors. Their vision for Winchester has at its heart working with Barton Farm's hopeful developer. There is no vision in the document of a Winchester without development at Barton Farm. This is frankly astonishing, given the document has been composed in the name of Winchester residents. More worrying is the fact it preempts the final decision at Barton Farm and undermines city residents' fundamental democratic rights. The Secretary of State has yet to give his final verdict, and there is a public inquiry later this year to review the whole position. All sides agree developing Barton Farm will irrevocably damage that quintessential something that Winchester and similar towns and cities in the UK have evolved into over many hundreds of years. It would be refreshing if our elected representatives stood shoulder to shoulder to defend this wonderful city of ours and our nation, instead of meekly acquiescing to external pressures, Winchester deserves better. There are numerous alternatives that would satisfy housing needs, affordable or otherwise, but your elected representatives choose the easy and lazy build on a big green space option. There is far to go before the first brick is laid on the arable farmland, green lung and integral landscape that is Barton Farm. Our campaign continues, even if your elected representatives, via their myopic vision, have thrown in the towel. If people are serious in wanting to protect Winchester, now is the time to stand with us and be counted. As a first step, visit our website at www.savebartonfarm.org and register your interest and support. That's from Gavin Blackman, the chairman of the Save Barton Farm Group.
The next letter seems to be backing up that last one. It's headed Terrifying Prospect of Overpopulation, and it comes from Rosemary Horsey. Sir, I share Councillor Eileen Berry's concern that our farmland is being lost to development, with dire consequences for food production, water supplies and other resources. But it is unrealistic to expect this to cease while the UK population increases at its present rapid rate. So long as there is a housing shortage, the demand for land will continue indefinitely. This country's population has been growing for centuries, with a dramatic increase in the post-war baby boom. But by the mid-1990s, the birth rate had dropped, and the projection was that the population would stabilise around 2020. Since then, of course, there's been a dramatic change, largely due to the massive influx of people from abroad. And the birth rate is now back to that of the 1950s. The United Nations project's world population will rise from the current 7 billion to between 8 and 11 billion, depending on whether the problem is addressed with the urgency it deserves. Because I believe it is vital to increase awareness of the terrifying consequences population growth poses for future generations, I strongly support Population Matters, a national charity which campaigns for a sustainable future and has a number of local groups across the country, including Hampshire. And that is from Rosemary Horsey, Ashley, Stockbridge.
PM Brewer writes about rats. They're everywhere. Sir, I'd like to let your readers know about the rat situation. Our garden backs onto the railway. Rats love railway banks. The neighbours love chicken. The rats come right up to the door. They used to run up the old apple tree, but it blew down on Friday. I don't know where they'll go now. They ran up the bird feeder pole, where I only have a few peanuts out. I can't have doors or windows open. One neighbour had one indoors last year. I used to ring pest control several times a year, but at £35 a time, only once this year. I have lived here for over 45 years, and I've had enough. Does anyone know anywhere without rats? This is from Mrs. P.M. Brewer in Canada Cottages, Mitchell Devastation.
And more about rats from Jane Noble of Lanham Lane, Winchester. Sir, read your article in the June 7th issue. Beg your pardon. The reason the rat population in Winchester is out of control is quite simple. The City Council started charging £35 last October to come to private houses to treat infestation. As most people assume the rats are not their problem, but are coming from a neighbour's garden, they're not prepared to pay to have other people's rats removed. I believe this was always provided free, for the reasons noted above, and because it is sometimes hard to find where the vermin are visiting from. I'd be interested to hear how the council expects to deal with what will become a massive problem if not controlled. Perhaps we'll have to wait until High Street returns to Dickensian times and they are seen running around the market stalls, Jane Noble, Lanham Lane, Winchester.
This letter is from Terence Dunn. Throwaway society, it's headed. So, as a daily dog walker around Kingsworthy, I deplore the way, because we are a country area, people think they can allow their dogs to foul and not clear up. But we now have a new clever type of dog. It goes to the toilet in a plastic bag, but sadly hasn't yet learned to take it home. Another problem is smokers who throw empty packets out of cars. On one walk, I counted more than 30 empty packets strewn around the village. Ditto empty beer cans. Are they also a throwaway commodity? I know this is not a local problem, as other areas in and around the city suffer the same. That's Terence Dunn from Loveden Lane, Kingsworthy.
Now, looking back, we begin with the news from... Oh, I'm awfully sorry. I'd forgotten that we've got three more letters. I was thinking you only had three each. I'm sorry. We'll continue with the letters. Off you go, Ellen.
David Harfield writes about the care home being underused because the council is not filling the places. There's a picture of Cornerways, the Kingsworthy care home earmarked for closure. Sir, I have read in your pages about the closure of Cornerways, a very caring, good quality home. The staff are wonderful, almost treating the residents as part of their family. The council claims the premises are underused. This is because it is not filling them, not because of lack of demand. It also said rooms were small and corridors narrow, with some larger rooms not even used. On visiting Bishop's Waltham House and West Home in Hairstock, I found their premises to be the same as Cornerways. The corridors are the same size and residents share facilities. There have even been rumours that council, not Cornerways staff, have been telling residents that rooms in West Home are en suite. Again, this is not the case, as only the nursing side has ensuite facilities. West Home is for 100% dementia patients, but the council says they have 9 spare beds ready to move some of the patients into. Not ideal for residents with dementia. Also mentioned is possible closure of Cornerways, but leaving open the attached day centre, though surely anyone with any sense would have suggested relocating the day centre, then concentrate on the possible closure of Cornerways. Also, there is land attached to Cornerways, which could be used for expansion. Current spending cuts are being used against the young and elderly. Millions were spent on modernising the castle for the few highly paid council bosses to use to decide who will be next in line for cuts. They also did not mention that there is a public consultation to decide closure, etc., and a questionnaire is available until August the 20th. Phone 01962 845 692 for a paper copy. That's 01962 845 692. In the meantime, I wish all the occupants and staff of Cornerways and the other two homes in Gosport and Fleet the very best of luck for the future, because they need it. David Harfield, Avondale Park, Colden Common.
This is something of a thank you letter. It's from Julia Sanderson, who's Secretary and Treasurer of the Friends of Hockley Viaduct. And that's supported by a little photograph in the middle of the famous series of elegant arches and the brick-clad Hockley Viaduct. She writes, "This week, the contractors, Avon Construction, started to set up and clear the site, ready for restoration work on the Hockley Viaduct to begin. The Friends of Hockley Viaduct would like to put on record our thanks to the previous leader of Winchester City Council, George Beckett, whose unstinting support and work enabled us to reach this stage, Nick Farthing of Sustrans, without whom we wouldn't have achieved much, and the four men who so many years worked so hard to get the viaduct listed, Chris Webb, Edwin Corse, the late Geoffrey Smith, and the late Alan Weeks. Winchester is in the debt of these six men who all worked to bring the project to this point. It was a great joy to see those of us who value Hockley Viaduct and the part it has played in our nation's history. Since ratepayers of both district and county are financially involved, I feel it's important that they should know that we're really on our way with the project to restore the viaduct and incorporate it into the local Sustrans cycle network. This project will affect us all in one way or another, for walking, cycling, and for cutting down the noise pollution from the M3, so close to St Cross and the whole city area. Julius Anderson of the Friends of Hockley Viaduct."
A fresh bid to stop the public right of way. That's the heading from the next letter from Max Forney. "Sir, it was with disappointment that I recently received notification that, yet again, the management company of the St Paul's Hospital housing development is trying to stop up the public right-of-way through the development. For the second time in recent years, I will have to devote time and energy into making a case for the retention of an amenity I and my family thought was our right as members of the public. Is this just another of the disposable assurances given to us by the promoters during the public exhibition a decade ago? It occurs to me that it is not a very robust or honest system that entertains an application to remove something that was conditional on the granting of permission in the first place. Perhaps it's about time the City Council made it clear that any attempt to revoke planning agreements for the purpose of further segregating sections of the community will not be encouraged. I note that amongst the items the planners would consider is case law. Should this bid be successful, then I urge anyone living near similar developments to be wary. Before you know it, you might be going the long way round." That's from Max Forney, St Paul's Hill, Winchester.
Now that is the end of the letter. And so we'll go to the historical items and start with 100 years ago.
1912. There was an impudent case of housebreaking in Winchester on Monday. The last house on the right of Upper Stockbridge Road, before the Roebuck Field, is Belsay, a semi-detached villa, residence of Mr. Charles Cockle, an assistant master at Peter Simmons School. Mrs. Cockle had to go to a shop in the town. Her sister accompanied her, leaving no one at home. The indications point more to its being the work of prowling thieves in search of food and money. Yesterday morning, a horse attached to a milk float bolted in the Romans Road and made off up Southgate Street. Mr. Henry Walker, licensee of the Green Man, made a plucky effort to stop the animal, but was himself knocked down and run over. Fortunately, one of the wheels of the float became locked in the wheel of a van owned by Mr. G. Newman of St. Cross, and no further damage was done.
This is 1962, 50 years ago, and still a bit of crime. Monday sees the opening of the Hampshire Midsummer Quarter Sessions at the Castle, Winchester. Four courts will be in session, two of them dealing with a total of 38 prisoners, the majority of whom will enter guilty pleas. As usual, most of the prisoners are charged with breaking and entering offences, together with three who have been committed from magistrates' courts for sentence. And the other item is the inaugural meeting of the Winchester Excavation Committee on Tuesday was mainly concerned with general work, rather than with any particular plans. It was announced, however, that digging would take place this year on at least one site in the Brookes area. Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Lord Ashburton, is the patron of the committee, with the Mayor, Councillor J.T.S. Hutchins, as President, and Viscount Simmons, the Bishop of Winchester, and MP Peter Smithers as Vice-Presidents.
And 25 years ago, 1987, Winchester School of Art should leave Hampshire Education Authority and transfer to the Polytechnics and Colleges Funding Council, a new body which Mrs. Thatcher will set up if her government is returned. This is made clear in a report published this week. The recommendation comes after the Governor's study of a government white paper, Higher Education, Meeting the Challenge. And the second item, new attractions at Winchester's 2 million swimming pool complex are to include a water slide, a toddler's pool, and a health suite. The council has agreed detailed design plans drawn up by architects Jackson, Green and Down and Partners, chosen to design the new leisure complex following January's fire, which caused damage estimated at £1.5 million. The architects have designed a 180-foot-long flume, which will twist its way through the complex, ending up in a small splashdown pool.
And now we have chronicle comment followed by first person.
Editorial comment: an inspirational day gives hope for the future. They came from miles around, the young and the not so young, and from different backgrounds, but they were all united in their cause to fight the scourge of cancer. Running, jogging or walking their way around the 5 kilometre course, participants were well and truly in the pink, sporting a colourful array of tutus, wigs, cowboy hats and leg warmers. And as if they needed further encouragement, addressing the crowd before the start was a mum of two, Jane Pardy, who gave an emotional speech about her own personal cancer battle. Every hour, 5 people in the South are diagnosed with cancer. And that's why an incredible 1,600 ladies came together on a drizzly Sunday to do their bit to raise vital funds to enable Cancer Research UK to continue to find new ways to treat and eventually beat the disease. Without the extraordinary advances in treatment already made over the years, some of those taking part on Sunday simply wouldn't have been able to. And now, the fundraising bandwagon rolls on to the next Race for Life, which will be held in Southampton on Sunday, July the 8th. Please visit raceforlife.org or call 0871 641 111 if you'd like to take part.
First person this week is written by Khalid Aziz, and he's called it A Taxing Time for Pasties. I spent most of my formative years in Plymouth, the historic dockyard, just, city on the Devon-Cornwall border. Those early years were spent in abject poverty, so I soon grew to appreciate the delights of pasties. We never called them Cornish, despising those foreign folk to the west of us, and kept at bay by the mighty Tamar, crossed by the chain ferry at Saltash. At that time, Brunel's Victorian single-track railway bridge was the only fixed link across the river. The magnificent suspension bridge for road traffic opened only in 1961, then the longest of its kind in the country. We pronounce them pasties in our peculiar Plymouthian dialect, with a drawn-out but short A, as Northerners pronounce the A in Bath. Bath.
I think it'll be pasties.
Pasties, yes. We'd heard the folklore... We've got linguists among us. We'd heard the folklore about them being originally a handy way for the tin miners to transport their lunch down the pit, and how one end of the pastry case would be filled with savoury and the other with sweet content, but we never saw such a concoction. No, we preferred our pasties plump and scrumptious, with a mysterious filling of minced meat. A fairly loose word when you consider what parts of the animal would qualify, and mainly potato. They were long on salt and probably the spiciest food available, particularly to us poor. We had our favourite purveyors. Selleck's was one, their main shop in a fire-bombed, gutted building in Ebrington Street, which eventually linked to what was to become Royal Parade, and which is now a sad shadow of its former glory. Selleck's was somewhat upmarket, though we didn't use such phrases then. Pasty glory went to two brothers, Ron and Ivor Dewdney. Apparently, they had an early falling out and went their separate ways, setting up competing emporia in various districts of Plymouth. We were always Ivor Dewdney people. Their flagship store, another phrase we didn't use then, is still there in Cornwall Street. Where else? They had pasties for every pocket. Mainly, we could afford only the sixpenny ones, that's six old pence, which staved off hunger pangs, but they were nothing like the gastronomic belly-busting whopper that was the one and fourpenny one, shilling and four old pennies. Dewdney's largely missed out on the fast food boom in the pasty industry, Ginster's having cornered the market, along with pasty boutiques, such as the West Cornwall Pasty Company, setting up at major railway stations. But for me, Dewdney's still reigns supreme. These days, you can order online, and they'll post them to you. I still prefer, on rare pilgrimages to Plymouth, to join the lunchtime queue outside their shop, to have my parcel of nostalgic ambrosia handed over by a cheery old boiler with a, "There you are, my lover, that's handsome." Today, they are still primarily a cheap treat for the poor. So what on earth was George Osborne thinking when he proposed taxing them?
We continue with further items of general news.
A survey asks, are you proud of where you live? People in Winchester have the chance to express their pride, or otherwise, in their city in the forthcoming Civic Day. The City of Winchester Trust is taking part in a 2012 national survey, which asks the simple question, are you proud of where you live? Trust members will be on the High Street on Saturday, June the 23rd, asking the question. It is a new survey launched by the charity Civic Voice under the title Civic Watch and is the civic movement's annual contribution to discovering how proud we are of our towns, villages and cities. The survey will reveal trends over time and show how civicness differs across the country. It will be a civic snapshot of the country, and it will become an annual assessment. Civic Voice will publish the results from each local survey so that people across the country can see how their town has scored compared to neighbouring areas. And Keith Lehman, chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, said, "We hope as many people as possible will take part in the survey. The Trust's aim is to protect and promote the character of Winchester. So it is important to know the views of local people about Winchester, what they value and what needs to improve. Everyone has until the end of June to complete the survey. They can complete it on paper in the reception of Winchester City Council or at the Trust's office at the Heritage Centre, 32 Upper Brook Street, on the mornings of Monday and Wednesday only."
Heritage style lights for city. Victorian cast iron lamps replaced. More than 150 Victorian cast iron lampposts in Winchester's historic city centre are being replaced with new heritage style lights. Street lighting is being revamped across the county as part of a £120 million project which Hampshire County Council agreed in 2009. Only three streetlights in Winchester City are known to be saved, including a rare gas lamp near the cathedral entrance opposite Minster House, the only lamppost in the city which is individually listed. Two elegant copper lanterns in St Thomas's Passage are also to be kept after an appeal by Chris Webb, the county council leader Ken Thornber. Mr Webb, who lives in Southgate Street, installed the lanterns in his parents' memory in 1980 and has had them engraved with their initials. He said, "All credit to Ken Thornber for listening, because the council was planning to take them down. My parents used to walk up and down St Thomas's Passage all the time, and I wanted to do something in their memory. Instead of a seat, which might be vandalised, I replaced the ghastly utility lights which used to be there. Now the County Council plans to temporarily remove the lanterns to fit new wiring. A grateful Mr Webb has offered to help pay for the refit." And there is a photograph of Mr Webb, together with Andy Hurdle and Phil Wilson, both of Southern Electric Contracting, at St Thomas's Passage, and they're holding these copper lanterns marked with Chris Webb's parents' initials. Quite large affairs, obviously taking them off, as it says, to be refitted with new wiring. New heritage-style lighting will replace 155 existing historic lampposts in conservation areas and 150 standard light columns. County chiefs aim to preserve the historic character of Winchester streets, but with the added benefit of the latest lighting technology. A spokesman for the City of Winchester Trust said members were pleased so many heritage-style lights are to be installed in conservation areas. He said, "The Trust recognises that most existing lights are inefficient and cause light pollution, and these new heritage lampposts will go a long way towards maintaining a traditional appearance during daylight whilst bringing the lighting up to modern standards. More than 2,000 lighting columns and lanterns have already been replaced or upgraded in Oliver's Battery, Tegdown, Badger Farm and Full Flood." County chiefs say they have consulted the City Council and heritage officers to decide the best locations for the new streetlights. Councillor Mel Kendall, Executive Member for Environment and Transport, said more than 60 roads within Winchester Conservation Area will see heritage style lights installed as part of the work programme of the city. The new lighting has many benefits, including lower energy bills, clearer white lights directed down onto roads and pavements, as well as reduced carbon emissions. It is not yet known if street lights in the Cathedral Close will be uprooted. A cathedral spokesman said, at the moment, no proposals have been made to us. The work is part of a private finance initiative, PFI, between the County Council, Southampton City Council and West Sussex County Council. In total, 145,000 streetlights, illuminated signs and bollards will be replaced or upgraded. The total contract is worth £225 million. And there is a little photograph at the bottom of the historic and sole-listed street lamp in the Cathedral Close.
The county plans a shake-up of register offices with the added headline, Whisper, I Do, in library weddings. Winchester's register office could move, and Bishop Waltham's part-time office close as part of a county-wide shake-up. County bosses say the changes are being proposed because of the tough competition for weddings from alternative venues. People in Winchester could be tying the knot at Hampshire County Council offices at Castle Hill instead. The County Council says there has been a decline in register office weddings in the face of competition from 150 venues in Hampshire now licensed to conduct ceremonies, including hotels, stately homes, and even Marwell Wildlife. Also planned is the possible selling off of Romsey Register Office at Hayter House and relocating it to the town's library. Money raised from a possible sale will go back to the cash-strapped local authority. But the plan has been met with anger in Romsey. Town Councillor Mike Wenman said, I cannot think of a more inappropriate location for a register office than Romsey Library. First, the library has limited space and is fully utilised with its existing function. Second, a library atmosphere, particularly that in Romsey, where accent has been given to supporting families with young children, is hardly conducive for registering births, deaths and marriages. County Council leader Councillor Ken Thornburgh will decide on the recommendation at his Policy and Resources Decision Day. The County Council says the Romsey facility has been underused for some time, and alternative offices are available in East Lee and Fareham. In the last year, for which there are figures, there were 248 births, 272 deaths, and 347 notices of marriage registered at Hayter House. The income for room use was £18,835, and the cost of running the building was placed at £12,057. Councillor Thornburgh said, by re-examining the use of buildings, co-locating, working in partnership with other local authorities, and relocating to other more widely used public buildings, such as libraries and council buildings, the service can work more efficiently. This is an approach that is being adopted across the county to generate around £2 million in savings each year, and which has already been hailed an example of best practice by government.
Nominate your charity heroes. Nominations are now open for the Wessex Charity Awards 2012, which recognise the dedicated work that is put in by charity staff and volunteers in the region. Anyone can nominate their favourite charity or individual for awards in the following categories: Charity of the Year, Chief Executive of the Year, Best Fundraising Project of the Year, Volunteers of the Year, as well as two new categories for 2012, Charity Business Supporter of the Year and the Lifetime Achievement Award. The awards are open to organisations in Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, Dorset, West Sussex, West Surrey and Wiltshire. It's an opportunity for charities to showcase their work and acknowledge the dedication of staff and volunteers. A gala reception and awards dinner for 300 people will take place on Thursday, October the 11th, at Winchester Guildhall, hosted by the cricketing legend David Gower. Jenny Warner, Managing Director of Charisma Charity Recruitment, which is organising the awards, said, "With all the fantastic work done by charities, businesses supporting charities and individuals in the Wessex region, we are thrilled to be organising this event again, now in its third year." Mike Denny from Oakhaven Hospice, which was the winner of the 2012 Fundraising Team of the Year Award, said, "Winning this award was a great honour and not only gave everyone here a big boost, seeing their work acknowledged, but also improved our standing and reputation in our local community." If you want to nominate a charity, visit a telephone 01962 610 077. That's 01962 610 077 before June the 30th, which is the deadline. Finalists will be announced in August.
A modern landmark picture dominates this feature. There's the pyramid and the glazed pyramid and the two big domes of course, the InTech Science Centre. And it's a feature article by Warwick Payne, who's visited the centre, which celebrates its 10th anniversary on the Mourne Hill base. It opened 10 years ago and is poised now to welcome its 1 millionth visitor. The InTech Centre, with its iconic four-sided pyramid, is the first thing most people see approaching Winchester from the east. It opened on August the 1st, 2002, and the Duke of Edinburgh came to the official unveiling 3 months later. For the last decade, it's been run by Phil Winfield, who left to join the At Bristol Science Centre in March. His successor, Verena Cornwall, has now taken over the director's chair at the not-for-profit charity that aims to inspire interest in science and engineering. She said, "I'm delighted to be leading InTech into its second decade. There are many exciting opportunities ahead, but also many challenges. Watch this space." While the centre is poised to mark its 10th birthday, InTech can trace its roots back to 1985. It was founded to encourage more youngsters to take an interest in science, technology, engineering and maths. For many years it was based at King's School in Winchester and was run by Tony Cardigan. It then moved to its 11 million purpose-built pyramid at Mourne Hill in 2002. The futuristic building stands beside the Winchester Holiday Inn at the gateway to the South Downs National Park. It's also next to several large satellite dishes run by Arkiva, based at Crawley near Winchester. InTech's marketing manager Andy Lane said the pyramid and dishes did present a problem in the early days. He said, "We had some visitors who drove up to the gate and said, 'We didn't realise you were a tourist attraction. We thought it was a secret government base.'" If InTech is a secret, it's now a poorly kept one, as annual visitor numbers have doubled. From 60,000 5 years ago, around 120,000 came to InTech in 2010 and 2011, with similar numbers expected this year. As with many tourist attractions, its fortunes are governed by the weather. But unlike many others, it doesn't pray for sunshine. Mr. Lane said, "We're miserable up here, as we like it when the weather's really bad. That's because up to 1,500 people pass through the turnstiles every 2 hours during soggy school holidays." Mr. Lane added, "If it's raining at breakfast, you can usually guarantee that it'll be a tin hat day, and we'll need everyone to help out. The February and October half terms are particularly busy, with visitors from across Hampshire, Dorset, Berkshire, Wiltshire, Surrey and Sussex. It's not much quieter during term time, with parties of Hampshire school pupils visiting virtually every weekday. In fact, the centre is so popular that teachers need to book around 1 month in advance. Around 30,000 of the 120,000 annual visitors are schoolchildren, and InTect is also branching out into corporate hire. Along with meeting rooms, it boasts an auditorium with around 175 seats and excellent acoustics. In 2008, the auditorium was upgraded and now doubles as a planetarium with several eye-catching shows each day. It's thought to be the largest capacity planetarium in Britain. Back in the pyramid, a new attraction for 2012 is the Push the Limits Sports Zone, tying in with the Olympic Games. All of the hands-on exhibits are designed and built by InTech's team of around 25 employees. At the moment, the staff are being balloted on a tricky question as part of the centre's 10th anniversary. They're being asked to decide the 10 most important inventions of all time, which could range from the wheel to the internet. Once the shortlist is complete, visitors will be asked to vote for the overall winner during the summer holidays. The centre is also in the process of deciding how to celebrate reaching 1 million visitors. Mr. Lane said it was likely to happen this autumn. He added that since arriving at InTech several years ago, one letter sent in by a six-year-old school pupil has always stuck in his mind. It said, "I love InTech and I wished I could live there," he said. For more details about the centre, which is just off the A31, Percy Hobbs roundabout, yes, it's still called Percy Hobbs, isn't it? But no Percy Hobbs there anymore. Visit intech-uk.com or call 01962 863 791. There's a picture of the marketing manager, Andy Lane, and the new director, Verena Cornwall, and the interior of part of the famous pyramid, including the new sports science area, which is the latest attraction marking the London Olympics.
A heroic soldier who lost both legs in a bomb blast in Afghanistan has cycled across Britain as a warm-up for taking on two of the world's toughest challenges. Sergeant Simon Harmer from Kingsworthy was injured in a devastating blast while on patrol 3 years ago, and he joined seven other wounded soldiers to cover 417 miles across the country by using just his hands. The cyclist passed through 10 counties, scaled 10,000 feet over the two-day challenge. And it comes as a warm-up for their epic 3,051-mile endurance ride across 12 states of America later this month. He will ride a specially adapted hand-driven bike in the race across America, and the Battle Back team hope to raise £100,000 for Help the Heroes when they scale heights more than 100,000 feet in just 8 days. Less than 1 month later, the new dad of one, that's Simon, will compete in the Ironman UK challenge. Yes, what a hero.
Meadow Trees clearance backed by Joseph Curtis. A plan to improve a Winchester beauty spot by cutting down trees has moved a step forward. City councillors backed proposals to chop down some 50 poplars in St Faith's Meadow in St Cross, which are harming the local ecology, according to Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust and council officers. The trees, an alien species, are drying out the boggy meadow, and last Thursday, Winchester Town Forum said the trust should be given a 10-year lease of the land and a £40,000 grant provided by Natural England to manage the site and bring it back up to standard. Damien Offer, the City Council's Head of Landscape and Open Spaces, said this work will also improve the views across the valley, down to St Catherine's Hill, and make it feel more open and attractive. The meadow is a site of specific scientific interest, but has recently been classed by Natural England as unfavourable declining. Mr Offer added he was confident the partnership could get its classification back to favourable by the end of the 10 years. But St Cross resident Mike Gibbons of nearby Clausentum Road criticised the Trust's management of the site over the past few years. He said, "To my recollection, all the work that has taken place on that site is a spreading of nettles put there by folly. I'm in favour of the scheme, but what I want to see is monitoring of the nettles." Mr Gibbons added the trees were not the problem, but the ecological damage was caused by the area becoming drier. Councillors agreed to send the proposals to Cabinet for its approval later this year. And Councillor Chris Pines said, "If this is achievable and someone else is funding it, then that's the end of the argument for me, and we should get on with it." A public meeting to discuss the conservation measures for St Faith's and St Cross Meadow is due to be held next Tuesday, that's June the 19th, at St Cross Hospital Church, from 7 p.m. till 8:30, and will include a panel session allowing for public discussion.
New housing could replace the former Southgate Peugeot garage in Winchester. The Southgate Group folded 7 months ago with the loss of more than 100 jobs across Hampshire and Dorset. It had traded since 1996 and also had branches in Andover, Romsey and Southampton. Administrator Begbiz Traynor has now confirmed that it is no longer seeking a buyer for the Winchester operation. Instead, Fair Oak-based developer Bargate Homes is looking to buy the site. Its managing director Angus Cook said it was too early to say how many properties might be built on the Southgate Street site next to the Everyman Screen Cinema. He did not rule out a mixed-use scheme of homes and business units, and initial plans are currently being drawn up.
Ex-head's child porn shame. The former head of a Winchester primary school has been jailed for downloading child pornography. A father of two, Brian Saunders, aged 49, was working as a teacher at a top independent school in Poole when his wife discovered 221 indecent photos on his laptop last March. Saunders, the ex-head of Mitchell Dever CE Primary School, was jailed for 20 weeks. He now admits it was a habit he had been indulging in for 10 years, Bournemouth Crown Court heard. Saunders was head of the Mitchell Dever Village School from 2005 to 2008. During this time, he spearheaded a £2 million rebuilding project which was blessed by the Bishop of Basingstoke in 2008. Jan Hallam, who worked at the school for 32 years, said she was in total shock at the news. The retired school administration officer said, "Well, to me, he was a genuine guy. He cared for the children's welfare and education. And William Helen, chairman of the Mitchell-Dever Parish Councils, said two of his three children attended the school when Saunders was head. Mr. Helen, who is also a school governor, described the news as like a bolt of lightning. He said there were no whispers of wrongdoing or suggestion that pupils were ever at risk while Saunders was at the school. Hampshire County Council has also confirmed no complaints were made while he was head there, which has about 100 pupils aged from 4 to 11 on the roll. And the Reverend Sue Foster, a foundation governor at Mitchell-Dever Primary, said, "It doesn't match up to the person I thought I knew, but then you never know. I feel very sad for his wife and children." Saunders' veneer of respectability included being chairman of the Pool Link Chernobyl Children's Lifeline, organising summer trips for youngsters from Belarus, and being a guardian for two Japanese teenage boys. Prosecutor Robert Pawson told the court how Saunders' wife found files including boys in briefs and boy porn on his computer, and she turned him over to the police. Officers counted a total of 135 level 1 images, 60 level 2, 3 level 3, and 23 level 4 images, with level 4 being the most serious. Saunders of New Road, Northbourne, Bournemouth, pleaded guilty to possessing indecent images. Brian Sharman, mitigating, said his client put his behaviour down to feeling second best growing up, and he was utterly remorseful. Jailing Saunders, Judge Roger Jarvis said his background working with children made his admissions all the more shocking. And he went on, "Those who access these kinds of images have a cynical disregard for the young people involved. Their lives are ruined, and you must know that when you pause to think." Saunders has been disqualified from working with children for life, and after leaving prison will have to go on the sex offenders register for 7 years.
Bursary boost for gap year students. More than 20 Peter Simmons College students have been provided with a boost to their gap year plans, with bursaries totalling over £8,000. The grants are awarded to students undertaking projects of great benefit to the communities they visit. With ventures across the world from Fiji to Nepal, there was no shortage of excited students at the awards ceremony. Catherine Horgan, who is putting the money towards her work with the Kenyan orphanage, said, "I want to be part of improving children's lives, and this will help me start on that dream. I am so grateful to the college and to the sponsor for their generosity." Sean Kelly, Chairman of Governors, said, "I was very impressed by these students' applications and their desire to help people and see more of the world. I wish them all the best for the excitement and challenges they have ahead." The bursaries are given by several charitable foundations: the Mercer's Company, the Athenula Trust, the Simon Clarkson Trust, and Claire Manning Award, the latter two in memory of students who died in road accidents. Annually, Peter Simmons College students are invited to submit their gap year projects for consideration. All applicants are interviewed before decisions are made on the allocation of the funds. This year's students, and there's a photograph of a smiling, happy group of young people, are embarking on a wide variety of projects, including working with a medical team in Ghana, teaching English to Buddhist monks in Nepal, and teaching football to Malawian children. Others will be training to become a Tall Ships Youth Trust deckhand and travelling to India to undertake service community work at the Girl Guiding World Centres in Sangam.
This piece is headed Phoebe's Day of All Days, and there is a small photograph of the said Phoebe smiling. She is an Alsford pupil who's taken part in a unique performance for the Queen, Phoebe Witherington, who's aged 12, of Perrins School, was selected from hundreds of hopefuls to sing in St Paul's Cathedral in the service to mark the Queen's Diamond Jubilee last week. St Paul's had searched for young singers from all over the UK to form the Diamond Choir. Boys and girls aged 10 to 13 and singing regularly in a church, school or other youth choir were given the chance to perform a brand new choral work called The Call of Wisdom by Will Todd. Some 400 children auditioned in 18 cathedrals across the UK. Phoebe sings in Winchester Cathedral Choir, so she auditioned there and was thrilled to be chosen for this once-in-a-lifetime occasion. She was the only chorister in the Diamond Choir from Hampshire. I have so many important and influential people listening to me as I sang. It was amazing, she said. I'm very proud to be British and to be representing the whole of Hampshire and Perrins School. It was such an incredible experience and a day I will never forget, she said.
A Winchester retailer has criticised the City Council for a dispute around a high street advert. Tony Roberts, the director of D&G Hardware in St George's Street, put a sign in the window of the now vacant Currys, directing customers to his shop for similar items. But Mr Roberts said he was then threatened with legal action by the council for flyposting, despite having permission from the building's landlord to display the poster. He said, "We're a well-known outfit in the town and all we were trying to do was direct customers to us. I'm not going around shoplifting or committing burglaries. This is heavy-handed and they're coming down on me like I'm some sort of criminal." He said the poster would be removed when a new business takes over the site. Paul Russell of Carter Jonas, agent for the owner, confirmed the poster had permission but would not reveal the owner's identity. He said, "We are not asking for the poster to be taken down." But a council spokesman said planning permission was needed for the poster and the landlord's permission was not enough. She said, "We've had complaints about the poster and we'll have to come down. It's like any normal planning application, you have to have permission to put it up. If it's not taken down, the council will proceed with enforcement action. If not taken down, Mr. Roberts could face prosecution and a fine of up to £1,000 a day, the day that it remains." Ward Councillor Ian Tate said the council should focus on other empty shops if it regards this as flyposting. He said the one that comes up time and time again is a poster in the empty Snack Attack in Southgate Street, which has been there for years. If we have any energy at the council to do something about flyposting, we should be doing something about that. But he also backed planning officers for doing their job in reacting to complaints.
A lot of bottles build a bench, and there's a photograph of four little primary school children, two of them clutching plastic milk bottles, sitting on a brightly coloured red, white, yellow and blue bench in their school. a Hampshire school is celebrating after receiving a new bench made entirely of recycled plastic. The benches at Whiteley Primary School are made from bottles and came about through a scheme with local builders David Wilson Holmes. The business challenged the school to collect as many plastic milk containers as possible and exchange them for the benches as part of its education programme to teach children about recycling. It took 572 bottles, and head teacher Leslie Pennington said the pupils really enjoyed taking part and it was a great way to get them excited about recycling. We would like to thank David Wilson Holmes for organising the project and especially for such a brightly coloured bench. It really has been a key attraction for the children at playtime, as well as giving them a sense of achievement. Paul Moran, sales director for David Wilson, added, "We can all do our bit, and this was a fun and interesting way to teach young people about recycling." And the scheme was completed ahead of Recycling Week, June the 18th to the 24th.
Work is underway on a £2.1 million upgrade of Kingsworthy's electricity network following a series of power cuts earlier this year. Homes and businesses in the area have been plagued by a series of power cuts, with pubs claiming to have lost thousands of pounds in revenue. Phase one of a four-part project began last Wednesday in Hairstock Road, where SSE is installing new underground cables to strengthen supply. Craig Gilroy, SSE Head of Operations, said, "We've got an ongoing commitment to provide a quality service and improve supply reliability to all our customers, and this essential work will see us renew nearly 2.5 kilometres of high-voltage electricity between our substation on Stockbridge Road before continuing along Hairstock Road and finishing down Wellhouse Lane. The company will work with Hampshire contractor Durkin & Sons, which has pledged not to disturb other utilities, such as water and phone lines." Winchester MP Steve Bryan was also on the scene to take part in some of the work himself. He said, "I've worked extremely closely with SSE since the power cuts, which so badly affected Kingsworthy, in particular, earlier this year. So it's really good to see work underway, and I hope the long-term security of supply can now be assured for my constituents. The initial stage should be completed by July the 4th, while the rest of the work will continue until winter." And there is a photograph of performance manager Mark Rose, Edward Durkin of Durkin & Sons, MP Steve Bryan with a spade starting to dig, and the SSE Head of Operations Craig Gilroy getting work underway, they say.
An Alsford car park is set to start charging to help free up street parking space in the town. A City Council committee approved a plan to introduce charges at Albury Park car park off the avenue after a request from the Town Council. At the meeting on Monday, Andy Hickman, City Council Head of Access and Infrastructure, said, "What we are trying to do is introduce management so we can allow season ticket holders a better chance to find a space and free up short-term parking in the town centre. A council report estimates the scheme could generate between £2,000 to £3,000 a year based on 10 customers a day, while the running cost will be around £800. Councillor Ian Tate, acting chairman of the committee, said, "If we look at the resources that are going to be committed to this, it's going to be cost neutral, if not a slight revenue boost. When parking was rearranged in Broad Street, it reduced the amount of parking. So I think this will improve things. The Town Council owns the land and will be responsible for maintenance, but the City Council will manage the site and recoup all the fees. Parking will be free for the first 2 hours, with charges beginning at 80p for 3 hours, £1.20 for four, and £1.50 for more than 4 hours. Season tickets cost £275, which allow year-round parking in Albury Park, as well as the station and Perrins car parks. Free parking permits would be issued to all town council members and employees. The changes will now be advertised and implemented, unless any objections are received.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and tape preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Ellen Gray.
Bye-bye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye, and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.